The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, is Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty good, feeling a little discombobulated.
Do you think it's the Frappuccino or what?
It started with the old logo on it.
That's right. I think we need to rebrand Ask the Professor, too, now that we have a new logo.
And it already is on the
new
website.
Tagline. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
What about all those mugs?
Oh, man. All the stuff they gave out to the faculty 2 weeks ago?
Oh, can I have one or two? They're not worth anything now.
or they might be worth more than ever.
Right, so. Because they belong in the archives.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. So, the archives. Oh, yes, that's a good way of putting it.
But, yes, I'm building a boundless future with my students every moment.
Excellent. Okay. Most excellent.
That is our new branding.
Our tagline.
By the way, I'm not giving my mug back.
Oh, okay.
I have a mug. Can I keep it?
Yeah, you can keep it. Keep it with the old, like, L.A. Law version of our logo that, like, Heather's wearing right now. It's kind of like law firms.
It's not that old.
It's not that old. It's, like, 26 years, right?
It was a white shirt yesterday.
Oh, wow. Also building a boundless future in the chemistry building, it's Professor Kendra Evans.
Hello.
Hello. How was that banana?
That banana was not good. I opened my lunchbox. First of all, I knew that I would have no time to eat today, so I ate my sandwich at 9 a.m., which was a good decision. So at 3:30, I said, it's time for something else. So I went into my lunchbox, and I found that the banana had already been opened in my lunchbox, which is never a good sign for a banana.
Never.
Never.
Did it happen here? Or did someone do it here or at home?
I think it itself opened due to the rough nature.
The mice might have a different version of that story.
Oh, yeah. It's been a little bit of a...
I could see two mice getting together and kind of working.
They don't have opposable
thumbs. I'm sure worse
things
have happened to me.
Oh, my gosh. Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. What's going on, Dave?
Just another day. Yeah. We're recruiting students today. My landscaper's trying to send his daughter to our school. So I had her sit in on my class, and she had to work with all these college kids. So
interesting.
She survived, I think. I hope.
Good. So she's like a senior in high school.
Yes. Right now. She's Berkeley High School.
Oh, at Berkeley High, of course. So. Home of the Bears.
My neighbor now teaches a class Monday nights and Wednesday nights. He's a designer at GM.
At CCS.
At CCS.
Okay, very cool.
I've seen the name. I've yet to meet them. So.
Yeah.
Those are the dulcet tones of Professor Prasad Venugopal from physics.
Happy to be here. Happy to be alive.
Aren't we all? Well, some of us are. Uh-huh. Most of us are.
No, it's not a boundless future in that narrow aspect.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Continuing around the table, Professor Jason Roach is here from Communication Studies.
I'm just breaking all the rules.
Breaking all the rules?
It just happens.
Okay.
It's part of my nature, I think.
Saw you loading a small human being into a car the other day as I
yeah, my
the
son.
So your son?
I'm doing great things.
Oh, okay. You are.
Oh, no. He's a boundless son.
Either that or you're involved in some kind of trafficking that we're not aware of.
Well,
how bad was he fighting when you saw that?
He looked quite content.
Okay,
the ransom note fell on.
Did you bring the money?
Oh my gosh,
money! Mm-hmm.
So things are well with your son?
Yes, going great.
Awesome.
Adoption should be finalized in November.
Pre-congratulations again.
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome news.
Oh yeah,
play with him.
Yeah,
yeah. Chase
him at a microphone.
No.
I tried bringing him this summer. Remember?
Oh,
that's all right. He's a little better now.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Wow.
Where you're
so bad that you blotted it out of his memory?
No. We just didn't want to chase him around at Dave's yard during our summer recording.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had a lawn left.
It's true. You would have had a track.
And everybody says he should be like a little baby child model, and we're like, yeah, no thanks. Cute little guy.
Speaking from the experience when it comes to child modeling, it's Professor Dan Maggio of the First Organization.
He did.
Well, you weren't a Hudson's model like everybody
was? I
was
a Hudson's model.
You were?
Yes. No, I wasn't a Hudson's model.
Oh, I thought you were.
I didn't even grow up here. I was a model in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
A model of what?
Finding baby clothes.
A model
of
what?
I don't know.
How are things going, Dan?
Oh, just great.
We may get a chance to stop sweating sometime soon.
I'm looking forward to fall.
Very, very good.
And
very,
the next 80-degree day is like next May.
Professor 70 Conan just walked in the room. Now she can't leave. Yay! We'll find a way to get you on the panel, Stephanie.
No. Grab a seat.
Her mind is stuck in all the stuff she was just teaching in the Department of Biology, right?
Sure.
Senior seminar, right?
Yeah.
Senior seminar.
Senior seminar.
Always senior seminar.
No plagiarism and how to give a talk.
Okay.
So we'll see if they listen. I don't know.
Yep.
It is toasty in here.
It's warm.
It's heavy.
It's just a little bit
heavy.
Right.
We're continuing around the table, and we're very lucky to have a guest panelist from Department of Education, Professor Ike McKinnon, former Chief of Police of the City of Detroit.
And Deputy Hello. Mayor.
How can you forget? Deputy Mayor. Yes.
And many other accolades.
But you've joined us again.
Yes, absolutely. Two and a half years I've been gone, and I'm back again, and... I've retired three times in my life. You know? Honestly, I've retired three times.
Man,
that's exactly, you know. Exactly. No, my son said, you have to keep working, Dad. Save money. Save money.
So, as they say, try again.
Exactly. Yeah, you know.
Wow.
Carmen Harlan's retiring. So,
Yeah.
I told her, listen, we're going to get this right and we're going to run away. See you
I hope that I live long enough to retire three times in my lifetime.
Well, that means
sounds
I'm
like
old.
A lot of fun.
That means I'm old.
Not occurring that at all. Well, folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on the Facebook. When last we were together, we were cleaning up some questions from Amber Hubley, our loyal fan and avid listener in San Diego. And by the way, that's the way she signs off on her emails. I didn't just make that up. We added some questions that were kind of all over the map. There's just a few more to go. How long does cheddar cheese have to age before it's called extra sharp?
2 years.
2 years is exactly correct. That's Kendra's category.
I know, I didn't get an opportunity.
Hudson wow. Model and cheese.
And cheese expert. Yes. Cheese sommelier. Mm. Wow. So was that just educated guess? Wow.
Yeah. I really like sharp cheddar cheese.
Oh, it's good.
So that might have something
to do with it. He's got to wait 2 years for it.
I got to wait 2 years for it.
Got to wait 2 years.
Yeah.
Who was, I mean, this is a little bit, no pun intended, of a biased question and almost borderline offensive, but who was our littlest president of the United States?
In what terms?
Exactly. In stature.
Weight, yeah. Or...
Actually, it says in stature and mass, he was the littlest.
Okay. No, I wasn't sure whether in accomplishments or...
Intelligence.
Ooh.
Any ideas, Ike?
Was it Buchanan?
It wasn't Buchanan, but you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A little bit earlier than Buchanan.
Adams?
He stood 5'4". This is not a joke. 5'4" and basically weighed 100 pounds even.
What?
Whoa. Wow. Penn's Polk? Heavier than that.
So this was before.
Polk, he's getting closer. Gosh. Same first name. Does that help?
James. Madison?
James Madison. James Madison. I mean, the littlest president, it just sort of sounds like an offensive question.
I wonder how tall Dolly was then.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
On the TV show Happy Days, that should perk up Professor Chow. Right. What was Marion Cunningham's maiden name?
Wow.
What a wonderful question.
Hold on.
Like, he's our ringer for classic TV.
Oh, okay. It's like Connors or... Starts with,
wow.
Hold on. Right, no, you have the right on. Starting
it's
sound.
Irish or...
Kelp.
Kelp is what it was.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Very well done.
How do you do this?
It was somewhere in
I just remember stupid things like that.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's great.
Tom Bosley, come on. He and Henry Winkler were the only ones that starred in all the episodes, too.
Okay. Wow.
That was
very
the
well
next
done.
Question.
Oh. Yeah.
It wasn't stupid at all. It saved one of those outdated mugs.
Yeah.
Or shirts.
We hope.
The logo's not even right.
Yeah, now we've got tons of stuff we can give away for free on the Ask the Professor show. It just all has the same black logo on it. Yeah. Well, this is pretty interesting stuff, professors. Matt, while excavating the top of my desk and some of my files, I came across these ATP questions submitted in 1991, apparently used in October or November of that year. In the last 25-plus years, some of the people and references have become a little more obscure, and you may need to provide context and some not-so-obscure hints. Also, I don't know how much of the information is true. That's always
a perfect set of questions for this show.
Still, they probably are going to be fun to use with proper disclaimers and a nod to Mr. Shevin, who sent them in originally. If you use these, let me know. Once they're ATP history again... I will get them into the archives. Sincerely, Professor Vivian Dix. A quick cursory Google search, she postscripts, suggests Elliot Shevin may still be living in Oak Park, Michigan. So here we go. Typewritten on a typewriter.
Well, nice.
June 18th, 1991. Professors, get ready. because you're going to hear now the rest of the story. These questions are taken from Destiny, a collection of stories written by the popular radio series by Paul Arnant and read by his dad, the inimitable Paul Harvey. Well, almost inimitable. There's that clown trying real hard to sound like him in those spots for a couple of Detroit area furniture stores. I love this humor. This is great. Wow. His voice is one of two to which my instantaneous reaction is to change the station. The other is Julio Iglesias. Sure. Oh, this guy's a regular comedian. 14 out of 20 is deemed passing. Sure. Good luck, Elliot Shevin of Oak Park, Michigan. So here we go. This is wild stuff here. On Monday morning, February 3rd, 1969, Al and his family boarded Eastern Airlines Flight 7, Newark to Miami. En route, the plane was hijacked and landed in Cuba. Despite the landing in Havana and return to the United States, Al's fellow passengers laughed because they recognized Al and believed the hijacking was actually a hoax. Who was Al?
Not D.B. Cooper.
Mm-mm.
It was one of those shows where they... what's it called? Like, or are they fake on?
Mockumentary? What?
No.
The passengers thought they were on a TV show called Candid.
The Candid Camera. Camera.
Who is Al?
It's not Al Roker.
Oh.
No.
Al.
I got his face in my head.
Candid Camera. Come on.
The founder of Candid Camera was Alan Funt. Alan Funt.
Okay.
They literally thought the whole thing was a joke. That's
some
crazy.
Joke.
That is crazy.
I don't think that would go over that well right about now.
Yes, no. Not at all.
He'd probably have like a serving cart thrown at him or something on board.
250 years ago, now remember, this is 1991.
I was just a kid.
Frederick Louis, the ne'er-do-well Prince of Wales, found he needed an infusion of cash to carry on his lavish and irresponsible lifestyle, so he decided to marry into wealth. Obtaining an audience with the elderly Duchess of Marlborough, he convinced her to give him her granddaughter in marriage, together with a dowry of £100,000. Fortunately, Frederick's family and their friends warned the young lady in time to call off her engagement to who was the granddaughter in Elizabeth? Question. It wasn't Elizabeth.
Victoria?
Catherine?
Victoria?
Mary.
Sarah. Simpson.
Elizabeth I.
Simpson. No. Actually, you guys need to think just slightly more recent.
Oh. QE2?
Mm-mm.
Victoria.
Nope. I mean, it's a little bit of a morbid clue, but what if I said August 31st?
Diana?
Yeah, it was Lady Diana. It was Lady Diana Spencer. 250 years.
Wait a minute.
Previously, she was sold off for marriage. That's pretty interesting, huh?
What? So they were looking into the future?
They were looking into the future, saying, your granddaughter will have to marry me, and you'll have to give me £100,000. Weird.
Barking at any price.
That is very weird. Okay.
I was confused as well, Dan.
Okay, I'll just trust that that's correct.
In 1873, Mrs. Etta Wheeler was a nurse and church worker who helped families in the tenements of New York. For months, she had tried to rescue little Mary Ellen Connolly from her abusive home, yet charitable organizations and the police were powerless. Mrs. Wheeler's last hope was Henry Berg, who was president and founder of a law enforcement agency with police power. Oh, two of his officers, armed with a writ of habeas corpus, invaded the Connolly apartment, took Mary Ellen into their protective custody under the only law applicable in this case. What was the agency headed by Henry Berg?
Ike.
Thank God you're
is
here.
Is it Pinkerton?
What year was this?
1873. What was it, Mike?
Was it Pinkerton?
Nope.
Like truancy or something like that?
No, but you're getting closer. I think there's an assumption you're making based on the names.
Is it like juvenile court or something?
No, but you're getting
child
closer.
Child labor laws?
Nope.
No, but we're talking about an agency. That
you hear a name like Mary Ellen Connolly, and you make an assumption about a name like
oh,
that.
Oh, it's like Salvation Girl, Army or one of these
Girl
Red
Scouts,
Cross
Boy
or some
Scouts.
Girl Scouts or something, no?
Girl Salvation Army.
She's Irish?
That's a pretty good guess, actually. It's a pretty good
leprechauns.
Guess. No, I'm not sure that Mary Ellen Connolly was human.
Lost.
Was what?
Human.
Animal
cruelty.
Humane
Society.
Yeah, it was the ASPCA.
Oh, the Humane Society.
Yeah, they were rescuing a dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so everybody says Ike as if I know something about Humane Society. Yeah, I know. Thank you.
You know.
Take it back.
In court, Berg testified Mary Ellen Connolly was an abused animal. Yes.
Oh, that's sad.
Very sad. Very sad.
The
okay.
Last name.
Was it an Irish setter?
Oh.
It would have made perfect sense.
That's
perfect sense.
Okay.
Let's try one more. One day in the late 1870s in the Ozarks, three hungry travelers happened upon a farmhouse. The widow living there obliged their request of a meal, despite her obvious poverty. Then, sobbing, she revealed the balance on her mortgage, $800, was due that afternoon, and she had no hope of paying it. Touched by her generosity, one of the visitors put a roll of bills into her hand, $800 cash. Reminding her to get a receipt, he and his companions rode off. Later that day, the landlord collected the money, only to be robbed of it by the same stranger who gave it to the poor widow, who was the mysterious benefactor.
Jesse James.
I got that one right off the top. Wow. What a great move.
That's a great
story. What a great move. It's a wonderful story. Absolutely
rob
hilarious.
From the bitch and get it back.
Yes. That is one of the best I've ever
heard.
That is the best outstanding. I love that.
Robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. For her first 33 years, from age 37 on, she was a bedridden hypochondriac. In the intervening 3 years, her dedication to nursing made the profession respectable in the United States of America.
Florence Nightingale.
Florence Nightingale, yeah. Wow, 33 years in bed? That's
not
incredible.
Not Heather McCauley?
No, it wasn't Heather McCauley. Because she was in Ireland.
I know.
With their soldiers in desperate need of shoes, Confederate generals Ambrose Hill, Henry Heth, and Johnson Pettigrew spotted an advertisement for R.F. McIlhaney's bootery. They marched off their troops 16 miles to relieve McIlhaney of his stock when on the outskirts of the town they encountered a small detachment of Union cavalry. They pressed on, confident that the only Union troops in the area were the small band they had already seen. Unfortunately, they had underestimated the size and tenacity of the opposing cavalry, as well as the proximity of the 1st Corps and the 11th Corps. 3 days of bloodshed followed. Where, in what city, was R.F. McIlhaney's shoe store?
Ooh.
Don't have to think too hard.
Atlanta?
Not
Richmond?
Atlanta.
Richmond?
It was Gettysburg. Okay. Yeah, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
All over a good
Yikes.
Pair of shoes. Yeah.
All over a nice pair of shoes. Yeah. The bootery, actually. I was like, well,
isn't there
the first
some
time
like
I've
poem,
used that word.
For want of a shoe, the kingdom was lost?
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Crazy. In February of 1945, Blanche Jansen has survived the Allied bombing of Dresden and taken refuge in a farmhouse. Russian troops swarmed over the countryside, looting and brutalizing the populace. But something Mrs. Jansen sewed together from an apron, a Nazi flag, and a nightgown, then hung over the farmhouse door, caused the Russians to pass it by. What was Blanche Jansen's scarecrow?
The invisibility cloak.
She had the plague.
Again, she sewed something together and hung it over the doorway of where she was hiding. From an apron, a Nazi flag, and a nightgown.
Hammer and sickle.
Red Cross.
A hammer and sickle.
Nope.
They avoided it?
They avoided it. They didn't even enter the house.
A huge
a
thing of
crossbones?
Lenin.
Nope. A huge thing of Lenin. You're getting closer.
Was it a hospital?
Maybe think about allies of these Russian soldiers.
Yeah. Allies of
what? American. Okay, American flag?
She made an American flag out of it, just assuming that the house was, you know,
totally
pre-captured.
Overthinking these questions.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's Paul Harvey's M.O. here.
Yeah.
And while we think about that M.O., we'll take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
The radio program on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors and their guests in a special session of unrehearsed questions and answers. I'm your host, Edwin DeWent. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Pleasure to have you here, as always.
Sure.
And to his far right, from the Department of History, Professor Greg Sumner.
Yeah, do we get, like, door prizes or something?
Is that, like, the radical right?
No, not really. He couldn't accuse Greg of being that at all.
Can we turn in our meal ticket for a door prize?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Sure. He's back. Kevin Sajak.
The Lazarus of piano
the
players.
The Lazarus of piano players, yes.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
We're glad to have you here. Most of the questions, certainly, you hear in this program are sent in by our listeners. Before we start with our questions from the people out there in Radioland,
I know it's coming.
We have the producer's questions.
Oh, these are always...
Our producer, Melissa Sandler.
Ungrammatical, historical, all the vices. Go ahead.
What is the last name of the architect who designed the General Motors Tech Center? He also did Cranbrook.
Surin. Yes. Surin, yeah,
that's
the
right.
Finns.
Sure. I'm going to throw in Dulles Airport next.
And he designed the first co-ed dorm at the University of Chicago.
Really?
Well.
Imagine my surprise in the fall of 1959, coming out of the protected atmosphere of Bates College to a place where they were throwing open co-ed dorms.
Wow.
I mean, at Bates, women were signing in and out in those days.
Mm-hmm. Imagine my surprise in 1968 going to Michigan State University and having a roommate who had all his kilos of marijuana mailed to our room in my name so he wouldn't be arrested.
Very thoughtful man.
It was. I was.
It was a man, wasn't it?
Indeed it was.
We are back with some fantastic questions from ages past from Elliot Shevin of Oak Park, Michigan. Let's try a few more of these Paul Harvey-related questions. The George Hotel in Piercebridge, North Yorkshire, was managed by two brothers whose last names were Jenkins. In its lobby stood a clock renowned for its accuracy. In time, the younger Jenkins died. Suddenly, the clock started losing time, and nobody could repair it. When the elder brother passed on at 89, the clock stopped completely. In the mid-1870s, American songwriter Henry Clay Work visited Piercebridge, where he heard the story of the remarkable brothers and their clock. It inspired him to write a song, which gave such...
My grandfather's clock very, was too large for the show.
Very well done.
Years on the floor.
Very, very good. Yes. It said, up until the 1870s. So this just shows how recent certain turns of phrase are. Grandfather clocks were called pendulum or coffin clocks, based on their resemblance. So it's pretty interesting there. In a day when banks could issue their own currency, there was such a thing as a $3 bill. The Howard Banking Company of Boston, the Central
Actually,
Bank of
Troy.
Actually,
can I stop you?
Oh, sure.
I learned that song when I was a kid in India.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
My grandfather's clock.
My grandfather's clock. I can tell, and I sang it to both my kids, and I sing it now, and they think I'm nuts. But.
Well, they think you're nuts regardless.
That's right, yeah.
So who taught it to you?
I have no idea, but I know I
Osmosis.
Knew it as a kid.
Yeah. That's amazing that you immediately made the connection, too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So we had a $3 bill. The Howard Banking Company of Boston, the Central Bank of Troy, the Pittsfield Bank, the White Mountain Bank, and the St. Nicholas Bank of New York City all issued $3 bills, and they depicted the face of a very well-known philanthropist who was on all of these $3 bills.
Carnegie.
Not Carnegie.
John Jacob Astor?
An extremely well-known philanthropist the world over.
Rockefeller?
No.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, I was on Bill Gates.
Mellon?
Philanthropist, not philanderer.
The voice of God is trying to chime in here. What are you saying, Michael? No, it was not.
No,
it was
Jesus.
Not.
The,
it was Jesus. I tell you what.
Rockefeller? Very
it
well
wasn't
known.
Jesus, but as close as you can get.
No. Julio Iglesias.
The Pope?
Julio Iglesias.
He's got dulcet tone.
The philanthropist
Jesus,
on the bills was Santa Claus.
Oh, seriously?
Yes, $3 bills with Santa.
I love these questions. It's just completely just one step out of where you might
reality.
Be.
Reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
oh,
it's
my
like
God.
Santa Claus?
It's
like
these
different.
Are like M. Night Shyamalan questions. Right? You're looking this way, but the truth is just over on the
like
side.
Like there's a parallel Ask the Professor show, like right
yes.
there.
If these were M. Night Shyamalan questions, the first one would be great, and like everyone after that would be really, really bad. And you
just
know
have glasses of water everywhere for no reason.
Swing away. It was September 1845 during the Mexican-American War. The U.S. 4th Infantry Regiment was waiting at Corpus Christi, Texas, and they were bored. Entertainment had to be found for 3,000 soldiers. So Lieutenant John Magruder provided them a theater. Its second production was Shakespeare's Othello, and as in Shakespeare's day, all the parts were played by men, even Desdemona. Although the soldier who played her looked splendid dressed as a woman, his performance was uninspiring, and he was replaced by an actual actress from New Orleans. Who was this unfortunate soldier actor?
Tony Curtis.
Booth?
Oh, 1845. Oh. It wasn't Booth, but you're in the wheelhouse, big time. Big time.
Not Abe Lincoln.
Some have said this was our country's worst president.
Ulysses S. Grant.
It was Grant. Yeah. It was Ulysses S. Grant. You're so bad, we're replacing you in the show.
And you know what he said? At least I'm not the littlest one. Oh, that was Madison.
That is true.
At least I'm not Madison.
That is absolutely true. In 510 BC, the army of Croton, outnumbered 3-1, defeated the army of Sybaris. The victorious soldiers in this battle were musicians. When they advanced to within range of the enemy cavalry, they began to play a melody often performed during Sybarite parades. This rendered the Sybarites completely unable to do battle. Why was this?
It was a Billy Ray Cyrus song.
This is one of those little bits of ancient history that if it's true, it's totally cool. But even if it's not, it's still totally cool.
They were crying?
It's just that song that just kept going on and on and on.
You know, you're a little bit closer to
the
thing.
They got rickrolled?
It's
a
small world.
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking they got rickrolled. That's all. I mean...
No, you know, they rode horses. 99
bottles of...
They rode horses into battle. And the other team, I nearly said, the other army knew that their horses were trained to dance to certain music, so they played it, forced the horses to dance, and then killed them all. Because the horses were too busy dancing to fight. Yeah. Actually, you already mentioned it today. I was envisioning the Benny Hill theme.
Yakety Sax? Hey, I told my wife, when my turn comes, I want that played.
You're a crossover to Yakety Sax.
Oh, okay. Yakety Sax played at my funeral.
All right. Boots Randolph or something?
What's that?
Boots Randolph played that? Yes.
Okay. So what was it?
Whatever made the horses dance.
Oh, the song? I mean, this is 510 BC, Prasad. It wasn't my grandfather's clock.
It was
but,
a lute and...
There wasn't like ASCAP or anything like
that. Doesn't have a name?
It didn't say.
The answer to the question was what it did to the other army, although, I was confused, so... I thought they were looking for the name of a song as well.
Well, you're close. You're very close.
What was it about the song that made
a song with no name for a horse with no name?
There you go.
There you go.
And they rode through the desert?
Was that America?
Yeah.
Been through the desert with a horse with no name? We all know about how Teddy Roosevelt and his Rough Riders charged San Juan Hill, but in truth, they charged up Kettle Hill. And Roosevelt wasn't second in command under Colonel Lieutenant Leonard Wood. So the Rough Riders weren't really Teddy's. There's one more popular misconception about the famous outfit. What is it?
His hat?
Not his hat, although that would make perfect sense.
They actually rode up in comfort?
No chaps.
Was not a safari suit.
Chapless?
No chaps.
Oh, my word. Oh, I got to let you guys know this one. So they didn't
no
ride
horses.
Anything.
There I was were, just going to say that.
There were
no,
no horses.
Horses
at the battle.
You got it right. I did.
So were they used coconuts?
I just didn't beat the bell. Yes.
I don't know what they used, but you know what, folks? We're out of time, so it's time for us all to say goodbye, Professor Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Venugopal.
Bye-bye.
Professor Conant.
Goodbye.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor McKinnon.
Goodbye.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
Author and screenwriter.
State Supreme Court Justice.
Check out the resumes of some pretty big wheels.
Chairman and CEO.
Police Chief.
And you'll find they have one thing in common.
University of Detroit Mercy.
UDM.
UDM.
University of Detroit Mercy.
An alumni list as impressive and diverse as the school itself, University of Detroit Mercy continues a tradition of excellence in education. To learn more about UDM's academic and financial aid programs, call 1-800-635-5020 or visit online at www.udmercy.edu. University of Detroit Mercy.
Chief Financial Officer.
We turn out big wheels.
Graduate, UDM.
As the Professor is transcribed to the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies and the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and technically directed by Michael Jason and Javon Holland today, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo. Thank you.